If you'll turn the machine on. Are we getting through? Is anything happening? I mean, will they? Will you turn the right knobs? I mean, we're on the air. Is that good? Oh, you say we're getting there. Oh, fine. Good. Any minute now.
To make sure I've got all the levels right, testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2. Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Is the podcast machine on? Are we prepared to do another podcast? Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. This may be one of my last podcasts because the blood moon is coming at the end of September, and it may be the end of the world as well. So in podcast 414, I'm going to devote the whole thing to I have to figure out if I can say this, apocalypticism. It's not a T. Yes, I'll have the apocalypticism, please. So we're going to talk about that in podcast 414. Well, now, if you're going to experience the apocalypse, the one thing I guarantee you that you're going to need is a good truck. So let me tell you where to get one. You have heard me talking about xgovernmentcars.com for years, and I'm really happy to announce that X-Government Trucks is now open in Forest Lake. XGovernmentTrucks.com is now open at 356 19th Street, Forest Lake. If you want to, you can call them at 763-777-8782. The new X-Government Trucks Mega Truck Center features dozens of the best brands, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. Ed wanted me to tell everybody they've got it arranged in kind of a figure eight, so you can drive through there and check out the stock. X-Government Trucks has lenders for everybody at all credit levels, so if you're looking for a work truck or you want to buy a snow plow, they can get you approved fast. Here's what you do. You find your vehicle, then you apply online for fast pre-approval. X-Government Trucks has put the three-day peace of mind guarantee up front, so you buy with confidence. And as always, they love taking trades. Highest values paid every day without all the BS. Get out to xgovernmenttrucks.com today, 356 19th Street in Forest Lake. It's very cool because their first sale was from listeners to the Bob Davis podcast, and that's one of the cool things that's happening with podcast advertising is we get someone who really shows up when they need to, you know, when they're needed. And it was really cool. They were really happy to have you guys be their first customer out in Forest Lake. So congratulations. Got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis podcast, Alpha Systems, which I'll tell you about a little bit later, and Buzzlets. You're going to be seeing the banner at the top of the page pretty soon. In fact, it's already up, I know for sure. You click on it, it will take you to the Buzzlets Indiegogo page, and you can learn about a new long-range device that enables you to get your kids' attention without screaming and yelling and waving your arms, whether they're at the water park or on the soccer field or down on the street. Buzzlets has started their Indiegogo campaign. Would love to have your support, so check them out. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis podcasts. So apocalypticism is the religious belief that there will be an apocalypse, a term which originally referred to a revelation of God's will, but now usually refers to the belief that the world will come to an end very soon, even within one's own lifetime. Now, coming up at the end of the month on September 27th and 28th, depending on where you are, a full moon eclipse will begin at about 10 after 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, because we're out of daylight savings time. And if we have good weather here in the upper Midwest, it will be visible throughout until about 11 o'clock or so. This is the fourth eclipse of what's known as a tetrad, four eclipses, the last of which will be the one that Pastor John Hagee and others claim herald the end of the world, basically. Now, I love the end of the world. I have been thinking about it ever since there was a power failure one summer night in my neighborhood when I was about 13. And I will never forget. It was a full moon. We had a power failure, and it was late at night. And you know, the power went out. And I don't even know if I must have been awake because I was always awake in the middle of the night. And I know my mom and dad were out there. I got out my Army surplus web belt, machete, my pith helmet, Boy Scout flashlight, which at that time I had a red lens in it so I could use it at night. I had a walkie-talkie, which was a giant thing. It was huge. And, of course, you couldn't raise anybody on it to save your life. And my Army shirt with the sergeant stripes on it. And I walked around in the moonlight up and down the street attempting to calm the neighbors who were already oddly calm. And I think they just laughed at me. But since we're talking about blood supermoons and apocalypticism, I'll have the, I love it, it's a T. I've decided to take a moment and do a little research on this end of the world stuff to see how long it has been with us. Now, I'm aware of history. I know that apocalypticism has been part of religion for a long time, but I had to refresh my memory for this podcast. And I have discovered that it has been with us for a long friggin' time. Probably before human beings actually started to record their views, before the Bible, before all of it. I'm sure that there was always somebody who was predicting the end of the world in some way, shape, or form. But let's just talk about the United States first. U.S. evangelical apocalypticism. Throw that out at the next Tea Party meeting. I want to talk about evangelical apocalypticism. It's been around since the 19th century, so 1800s. William Miller, and I think most people are familiar with William Miller. He famously predicted Christ would return in 1843. So Millerites, people who followed Miller or Seventh-day Adventists, gave away all their possessions and waited for the day to arrive. And in 1840, he predicted it in 1843, and in 1844, no Jesus. Hence the term Great Disappointment. It actually took almost 100 years before Seventh-day Adventists ventured back into the prediction business. Margaret Rowan, who was, I think she was the head of the Los Angeles chapter of the Seventh-day Adventist, predicted Jesus would return on February 6th, 1925. That date might be, now today, if that was done, it would be a sequel to the first Great Disappointment. And I don't know that they've predicted Jesus's return with a specific date since. And then, of course, Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses also describe some scenario where the end of the world is imminent and believers will be saved. I love it when the Jehovah's come to visit me. They come every now and then, and we have coffee on the deck. And the last time they came, I talked to them so long that they left. They left. And the thing that I can never get my hands around with Jehovah's is that only 144,000 people actually ascend to heaven. So if you're not one of those 144, you're kind of screwed, I guess. And my thing, I had two questions for them. Give me a date, which none of them can. And how do I get to be one of those top people that gets, you know, chosen to be the first, you know, they call it the select, the 144,000 who are sit at God's right hand. I want to be one of those. And they couldn't give me an answer to that either. Generally, this goes back to the year 1000 to a guy named Rudolphus Glaber, who was, I think, born around 900, literally 85. He was a normal everyday guy until he took a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. He came back and didn't really have any, he didn't really have an experience until one day he claimed to have awakened as a new person with a vision that allowed him to suddenly understand the book of Revelation. It might be said that the scales fell from his eyes, if you wanted to use a biblical term. He wrote a book which actually is harder to understand than Revelation's itself, if that's possible. And his book predicted the end of the world. It was supposed to illuminate the Revelations ideas, and really was the first book written that kind of described what Revelations described. Now, I don't want to go on too long about Revelations, but Revelations was not written by the Apostle John. It was written by a Jewish guy who was incensed over the Roman conquering of Jerusalem, and wrote the Book of Revelations as sort of a rant about, Rome getting its due after they suppressed the Jewish insurrection, basically. Just a quick word on Revelation, which is also interesting, is my understanding is that there were many books like Revelations, which were read pretty widely distributed in Rome and read by a lot of Romans. And that's very interesting in terms of our time today and people's obsession with end times type prophecy, because apparently the Romans at this point were also very interested in end times prophecy, and Revelations was the only one that made it into the Bible. Saint Augustine did not believe it should be in the Bible or that it should be taught, and I don't believe, and I could be wrong about this, but my understanding is it was never taught as part of the catechism. So a lot of Catholics don't quite understand where Revelations goes. It's much more of an evangelistic type of book these days, and really through history, because Catholics were never really taught Revelation because the Catholic Church really didn't know what to do with it. And of course, St. Augustine didn't think it should be taught at all, because he must have known that there were several other these kinds of books that could have been in the Bible, but they left that one in there. Now, getting back to this guy, Glaber, he was also an advisor to royalty around the year 1000 and did quite well selling his prediction services to them. So, you know, it was they believed, in other words, that what Revelations was saying was that the end of the world was imminent. Glaber sold this idea that there were three earth ages, that the three earth ages grew as a tree, each fertilizing the next, and that a third age would be the age brought in by Jesus, which would be an age of peace and religious study. And since he was kind of a religious guy who studied a lot, that would have been really nice for him if Jesus had returned to as predicted, to usher in that time. In England, later in the 1600s, they had something called the Fifth Monarchy Men. They predicted Jesus would come back and start up a new kingdom around 1666. This was very popular during the era of the Cromwellian dictatorship after the Civil War in England, but that didn't end very well either. Especially for King Charles, who was put to death during that period of time, reluctantly, of course. Isaac Newton predicted the end of the world would occur in 2060 based on his mathematic analysis of the Bible and, here's the key phrase, deciphering of the Bible codes. And in a sort of hat tip to my father, who was a scientist and who he felt Isaac Newton was the greatest man ever to live in history, I would have to put money on Isaac's prediction before any of them. This is the one I would bet on. But then again, it's in 2060, so unless we discover some anti-aging medication, which I'll be the first to take, I probably will not be here by then. Every culture and every faith and every people on the planet has some kind of myth about the end of the world. From the Mayans, we all know about the Mayan calendar, which was supposed to end on December 31st, 2013. And of course, as far as I know, we're still here. And of course, the Navajo and the famous white buffalo and all of that. And there are people who also think aliens will come down as well. That's kind of becoming a religion. And I think everybody can remember the hysteria about Y2K, which is so comical, I can barely stand it. So during that period, I actually got caught up in the Y2K thing, and I remember I said to my friend Roloff, who's a Marxist, and Roloff would tell everyone he was a socialist, but he was really a Marxist. But Roloff said, come on, do you think these guys are going to, you know how much money would be lost if everything collapsed on because of a silly computer thing? Do you think that these guys are really going to let that happen? And I had to say, you know what? I realize you're a determinist, but I actually can find nothing to disagree with that statement. So my favorite story about New Year's Eve, was it New Year's Eve 2013 or New Year's Eve 2012? That was Y2K. I'm sorry, that was the Mayan calendar. New Year's Eve 2000, so it would have been 1999. We're going to party like it's 1999 going into the year 2000. And it was that night, because I remember I brought, and this is so embarrassing because I'm an adult and I really shouldn't think this, but I had I bought a box or two of meals ready to eat. So I had a bunch of MREs and some survival equipment. And I brought this giant backpack with me on the plane from New Jersey or wherever the hell I was living. I guess it was Chicago at the time. And or St. Louis or something. I brought this giant pack with all this survival gear on it, you know, with it with me, and I had it with me. I was still married at the time, and we were staying at my in-law's house in Minneapolis, and I'm up on the third floor, and I had my backpack, and I was listening to Art Bell religiously. Art Bell, the famous coast-to-coast radio host. And that was the night Art jumped the shark, because I think Art was genuinely convinced that there was going to be massive mayhem in the world as the new day dawned and as computers failed. There were going to be people lined up at ATMs. It was going to be like War of the Worlds with the guys. And I remember the War of the Worlds movie from the 1950s, the black and white, which was usually on TV after school when I was growing up. And it had Gene Roddenberry. Was that his name? Gene Barry. No, it wasn't Gene Roddenberry. It was this guy named Gene Barry played the scientist with the plaid shirt, flannel shirt on. And in the movie, there were all these scenes of the angry masses jumping on, you know, trucks, those 1950s trucks with the wooden sides and, you know, pulling the driver out and beating the driver up and taking all the stuff. And, you know, that's what I thought was going to happen on Y2K. So the first thing that happened is before we went off to the place we went, the whole family went to this place to celebrate New Year's Eve. Obviously, the Kremlin is ahead of us a few time zones. So in Russia, they were having New Year's Eve, and oddly enough, nothing was happening. And as we worked our way across the world, I kept checking, you know, to find out if anything was going on, and nothing was. And I remember I came home, and at midnight, Art went on, and he was like, well, I'm a little surprised because nothing is happening, but maybe something will. And it was so funny to sort of go, well, so much for that little thing. And I learned from that, don't ever, ever, ever put all of your eggs in one basket, like so-and-so is going to win the election, or this is going to happen if this isn't done, because you will be really, unfortunately, surprised by what actually happens. Astrologers have a field day with this stuff, I found out in my research. You know, they say that eclipses always herald change, and of course it can be bad or good, depending on what you do. And this is a hint to do what the astrologer says. If you want to know more, hit me up for a personal reading, and I'll explain it to you. People throughout history have always ascribed bad things to lunar eclipses. The Jewish Kabbalah is full of these, you know, ascribing bad things to lunar eclipses. Now, scientists do not use the term blood moon, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that in a second, because there's some interesting facts about tetrads and blood moons, and we'll talk about that in a little bit here. But so all this apocalyptic stuff is really history, you know? That's why I love reading about it, because I love history, as you know. And of course, history demonstrates one of the paths to personal wealth is through property ownership. Many continue to rent while waiting to purchase their first home or move up to their next home. Now, in the last 5 years, there have been many foreclosures. There's a lot of houses sitting empty for extended periods of time. And then there are these houses that were renovated by fly-by-night house flippers. And to negotiate that risk, you need real estate professionals that understand the market. There's also the interest rate component. Now, the Fed left interest rates at their current rate, which is basically zero, and we'll leave it there probably until the end of the fall, at least. And so the pressure to increase rates has maybe dissipated a bit, but it hasn't gone. And it's still time for you to take advantage of really amazingly low interest rates if you're in the market for real estate or someone close to you is considering buying their first home. I want to introduce prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers of the Bob Davis podcast. Prideofhomes.com is a husband-wife licensed real estate agent team and a real estate investor with with expertise to share with you. Take a moment and talk with Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate and PrideOfHomes.com in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Champlin, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, and the North Metro Corridor. If you want real estate expertise, Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate can help you out. Visit their website today at PrideOfHomes.com, or you can call them at 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. So yeah, scientists do not use the term blood moon. Some use it to make sure that people understand the difference between the type of eclipse that causes the light to refract off the sun and spill onto the moon, right? Tetrads, this is what we are experiencing now, occur on Jewish holidays because the Jewish calendar is a lunar solar-based calendar, so it stands to reason eclipses are going to hit some Jewish holidays. By the way, another thing is because it is a solar-lunar calendar, they have to add months every now and then, and so that's one of the reasons for all of the religious concentration on this particular tetrad. Tetrads themselves aren't even that rare, despite what preachers say. There will be a series of tetrads about 15 years from now, from 1932 to 1933, and then shockingly enough, 10 years later, from 2043 to 2044, less than 7 years after that, 2051 and 52. And unless Isaac Newton is right, in 2061 through 2062, we'll have another tetrad. And then 10 years later, in 2072 and 73, and then toward the end of the 21st century, in 2090, we will have yet another tetrad. And there have been tetrads in the previous century as well. I mentioned that the moon may or may not turn blood red. It may actually turn orange. It all depends on the angle of the sun this particular day. This, on the 27th of September, will be a supermoon because it is alternately and either described as a harvest moon because it rises late at this time of year, so farmers can harvest with it in antiquity, really, or because it is closest to the earth at this time of the year, or always. I don't know. I can't tell from my research. My understanding is it's a supermoon because it's close to the earth, but it's also a supermoon because it rises late in the day, in the dark, and kind of hangs close to the horizon, so it shines all over the fields, and your grandpa Jeb can farm. This super moon eclipse hasn't occurred in a long time, like 30 years, which is another reason everybody's freaking out. But now you know the schedule for the next 80 years or so. So really, what's the big deal, right? And I'll tell you what the big deal is. If you watch The Walking Dead, or my new favorite show, Fear the Walking Dead, which is the backstory for The Walking Dead, you know, and really if you've watched any movie about the end of the world, if you've watched, War of the Worlds, whether it's the new one with Tom Cruise or the old one with Gene Barry, you know that the coolest guy in the room is the guy that knows it's going to happen before it happens and was predicting it. Whether it's the weird guy with the mobile podcast facility that has aluminum foil up inside, or it's the conspiracist, or any of that, the coolest guy in the room is the guy that knows it's going to happen and tells everybody. Even in The Walking Dead, there's a character who is a fat kid with acne who is steeped in all of the most important information, and he, of course, knows what's going to go down. And he's, at first you think he's weird, but really you find out he's the coolest guy, right? Some suggest that we do better when we have a beginning, middle, and end of a story in our lives. We need endings. We need to put something in our lives and into perspective, and we need to put have something in our lives that puts events that are hard to understand and complex into perspective and context. Now, there is a reality. There is a real world. There is an objective reality where things take place on dates, and there's consequences, and we can debate all day about whether or not the consequence is because of this action or that action. That is the nature of humanity. So an end of the world myth, especially one that coincides with your religious beliefs, is really perfect for this stuff because it explains why Benghazi happened, or it explains why the stadium collapsed somewhere, or it explains why there was an earthquake in Chile. One of the theories presented to me about zombies is from my friend Mitch, who wants a credit. And he deserves a credit for this particular theory. I don't know if it's his, but we'll give him credit. He says, we're so siloed when it comes to media in this country. We like zombie stories because people who don't agree with us make us feel like the last man alive in a world gone crazy. And because we don't share, because we don't relate to each other when it comes to these kinds of issues, we think of other people as others, strange, otherworldly people, not real, not alive. They're zombies, subconsciously anyway. So, I mean, this is not a conscious thing, but one of the reasons zombie stories are so popular is because of this. Who knows if this will ever burn out? I mean, I think it, you know, zombie stories, you know, vampires, it goes back centuries. And a lot of it has to do with the subconscious. And I think of it this way. Were you ever afraid of the dark? How did you cure your fear of the darkness? Mine was I finally forced myself to get out of bed and look under the bed and realize there was nothing under the bed. And I also forced myself to turn out the lights completely and sleep. And I mean, I was a kid, right? I also realized that if there really was something lurking in the closet, there was probably nothing I could do about it. And then I think later, I walked around in the middle of the night in the darkness in the forest and lost my fear of the darkness. The fact is that there's a lot of fear out there about things that are unknown. It's fear of the darkness. And it perhaps it does derive from childhood. I don't know. But it people are afraid. There's a lot of fear. I see it a lot in the political sphere. I also, my personal interpretation is that it's a subconscious interpretation, especially of people of a certain age, that they are afraid the end of their life is approaching, or they're afraid that they will be useless, or they're afraid of things they don't understand. But some people I've met just don't want to begin the process of educating themselves about things. They want easy explanations for everything, and they want them to be convenient, and they want it tied up into a nice package. They don't want to be told that they have to go back to read college-level textbooks on democracy and business and society, or read something like Gibbon or the history of Rome or anything like that in order to learn. They don't want to admit the complexity of modern life and the complexity of the solutions to some problems that are almost impossible to define to begin with, right? I actually ascribe it to people getting old. They just don't know that they're getting old. And so people who are a little older tend to be a little more brittle. And I think for some people, this is probably going to be hard to hear, but I think it starts a lot earlier than 75 years old. I think it starts in the late 40s that people start to get a little fearsome. They start to get a little afraid of the dark, so to speak, the unknown. And this for them becomes a big thing as they go. And unfortunately, it is a subconscious fear. And as all things are with the subconscious, it defies explanation. And what you think it means usually isn't what it means. And when it comes out, it will bite you in the ass and you won't think that it was you. It's so freaking confusing. Here's the bottom line for me. You eventually have to come to the conclusion that it is impossible to predict the future. I love predicting the future. I love saying things and have them come true. I love connecting the dots and saying, if we don't do this, that, and the other thing, then this is going to happen. But I never believe that I'm going to be right. So it's always a big surprise. Somebody said one time in a tweet or something like that, someone was talking about me. And they said, you know, he predicted 9/11, which it's weird because we were talking about the price of the 1990s foreign policy being presented to the country in the new, you know, millennium. And somebody called in and said that they're going to crash planes into the World Trade Center, or they could. And I laughed, but I said the bill hadn't been presented yet for the Clinton administration's, you know, conduct of foreign policy. And the next day, 9/11 happened, or a couple of days after, and people said that I was a prophet or something, some people. And somebody wrote, well, I don't know about that. He's only right 50% of the time. And yet, if you look at stock pickers and market callers, they can be wrong once. They can be right once, and they'll make a career on being right once. You can't predict the stock markets. You can't predict what voters are going to do on election day. It doesn't matter how many quants from Harvard you have working for you. It doesn't matter about probabilities. It doesn't matter about, you know, Fibonacci or any of that stuff. You can't predict what markets are going to do because they are a living thing. You can't predict what voters are going to do on election day. People try it all the time, but they're almost always surprised in some way, shape, or form. You can't predict how cold the winter will be or how hot the summer will be. Believe me, I know that. And you can't predict how many hurricanes there will be because generally you're going to be wrong. That's why we have something called faith. You can believe in a power greater than yourself. You can believe that people are basically good. You can be an optimist. You can also be a pessimist. You can be an atheist. You can be, you know, anything you want to be in a free country. You can follow a cultural code or not. But I think we run into problems when people believe that they have to convince others to believe as they do because they have to be saved from something called the end of the world. In other words, we have to subscribe to a certain point of view which says we have primacy over all others because we are right about the end of the world. Again, that has been predicted to occur on such and such a date after such and such things happen or whatever. I can tell you one thing, and I think people who are religious are great. Some of them are great people. I'm not trying to criticize religious people. I just think that that for some people, their fear is getting the best of them, and somebody needs to say, you know, probably nothing is going to happen, and if it does, I'll be out in the field watching the eclipse on September 27th and 28th that night. And I can guarantee you something will happen, you know, as a result or maybe not the result of the eclipse. You know, somebody will do something stupid somewhere. A politician will say something dumb, you know, or withdraw from their campaign or something. And again, if the world ends, then I will rush to record a podcast and get it out before the lights go out. So thanks for listening to the podcast 414. Maybe nobody will ever hear it because if it all happens on the 27th, then it'll just be out there in the ether. Maybe aliens will listen to my podcast and go, this guy. Thanks once again to the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 414, PrideOfHomes.com. PrideOfHomes.com is a husband and wife real estate agent team and a real estate investor with expertise to share with you. Take a minute and give them a call or talk to them. Check out the website at PrideOfHomes.com or call Eric and Aram Lucero at 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. Thanks to PrideOfHomes.com and Luke Team Real Estate for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Also want to thank Ex-Government Trucks in Forest Lake. It's brand new. They got a huge selection of Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, Expeditions, Yukons. If you're looking for a work truck or you need a new SUV, you really need to check it out there in Forest Lake at 356 19th Street, Forest Lake. Where's the number? Here it is, 763-777-8782, Ex-Government Trucks. And thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Got to thank Alpha Systems for being the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcasts. One of them, the other one, of course, is Buzzlets, which I told you about a little bit earlier. Have a lot of pilots listening to the Bob Davis Podcast. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It's FAA approved. If you're looking at any kind of avionics package to put in your plane, you'll geek out on this and it will save your life someday, perhaps. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thank you again for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast digital side, and thanks you guys for listening on Stitcher.com, of course, iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com, and thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting on Facebook, on Twitter. I am bdavis7843 on Instagram. Check out my pics. I love Instagram because there's no snarking. And thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 414, The End of the World, my favorite subject.